Welcome to Paddle Pilgrim Podcast, the podcast which explores adventures in life, relationships, and the human spirit. I'm Dave Ellingson, adventurer, author, educator, and seeker of wisdom. Our guest today for our Magic of Music series is a professor of music and conductor of the St. Olaf Orchestra, St. Olaf College in Northfield, Minnesota, Stephen Amundson. Welcome, Steve.
Dave, it's so great to be with you. Thanks so much.
One of the delightful experiences, Stephen, having these conversations about the magic of music is connecting with folks whose journeys have crossed paths with my journey over the years. And in your case, Steve, we go way back to, to when we were children in New York and our families would get together. Our dads were seminary classmates, dear friends, and my parents were your baptismal sponsors. And so we share also a common alma mater. So it really is a joy to reconnect after all these years.
It's incredible, Dave. And, you know, we're related through marriage because, as you know, my dad's sister married your uncle.
Right.
And of course, I've known about you for many years. And I don't even remember our encounters when we were young. But of course, your reputation precedes you. And it's just so great to be with such a fantastic person and a person who's had such an incredible journey throughout your life.
Well, this is about your journey. So tell our listeners about your musical journey, when it began, some of the landmarks and mentors and influences, and where it has led to this day.
I will be happy to do that. You know, I was born in Brooklyn, New York. My dad was, as you mentioned, he was a pastor out there. And I was the fifth of five kids. I was sort of that afterthought, I think. And my next sibling, his name was Dick, was a terrible crier as a baby. He was crying all the time. And I was born 3.5 years later. And my family was determined that I was not going to be crying all the time. So they put my little baby buggy in front of the stereo. And I listened to music. Apparently, of course, I don't remember this, but my family had me listening to one album after another. And I think that probably was good for me and my musical ear, you know. I was fortunate at age four, the same piano teacher that all my siblings had in New York, I started piano with this woman. And she was really pretty amazing. She taught me how to read music, of course, but she also made me sing the melodies. So it was a much more holistic piano teaching experience. And so I credit her, Mrs. Olson, I credit her for helping provide sort of a musical foundation. But my family were all singers. My dad loved to sing and he was constantly getting the family together around the table. We would sing together in church. As time went, we had a little barbershop quartet in our family, my dad and his three sons. And of course, I had to sing first tenor because I hadn't changed voices yet when we first started doing that. And it got more challenging because we were really all baritones. So as we proceeded, but so music was just a joyful existence in our family and it was always celebrated. And, you know, I think I read music before I read words because it was just understood. We would pick up music and we would read it. And I'm just so grateful for that. Mm. I had a band director when we moved to Wisconsin. I actually moved the very day President Kennedy was shot. So of course, I'll never forget that. We were just getting in the car. Dad turned on the radio and we heard that awful news. And I'm telling you, that was one long trip to Wisconsin from New York.
Wow.
I'll never forget that. But when I did get to Wisconsin, Dad was pastor of Norway Lutheran Church, one of the oldest Norwegian Lutheran church traditions in this country. And I had a wonderful band director who was just such a good teacher. And he made me read rhythms every day. I would have to just constantly improve my skills. You know, I was just in a small town outside of Milwaukee. It wasn't particularly a good music program. But then the other things that were really helpful for me is I went to the University of Wisconsin, Madison Music Camp. I got a scholarship in seventh grade and it kind of changed my life because I was surrounded by so much good music making that I'd really never encountered before. And interestingly, you know, 20 years later, I was back there guest conducting, and it was just surreal for me because I just thought I could never be that good as all these kids around me. So that came full circle, and I was really kind of awestruck by, wow, I guess I've done okay. I'm back here. But anyway, you know, I just had a kind of a normal childhood. I took piano lessons. I played the trumpet, later the euphonium, and then the trombone. Never really had much exposure to orchestra, interestingly, other than attending some concerts. But all of my older siblings went to Luther College, as did my father. And I was just going to go to Luther. I mean, I decided that when I was a little kid. My dad grew up outside of Decorah in Highlandville, the old farm homestead there. And so I went to family reunions every 4th of July to the old farm homestead. And of course, we would always stop by Luther. And it was the place I knew. My older siblings had great experiences there. And then there's that St. Olaf, because St. Olaf and Luther are just so, in my life, they're just mm-hmm. big. They're big parts of my life. But anyway, at Luther, of course, Weston Noble. My sister Janet played principal flute in the band under Weston. She's 16 years older than me. But I just have to share one quick thing about in New York, when the Luther College band was heading to Norway, Weston Noble met me when I was 5. My sister was 21. And there I was waving to the big boat. And here was Weston, who had just said hi to me, and my sister Janet. And Weston always remembered me from that moment. And that was really amazing for me, because when I heard the Luther Band for the first time live, when they were on tour, I was absolutely blown away. And I couldn't wait to play in the band under Weston. So I got to, because I actually went to Green Bay for my senior year. My parents moved and dad kind of semi-retired and had a part-time job at a church. But anyway, when I went to Luther, then I expected Weston Noble to be conducting the band. Well, it turned out that was the year he retired from conducting the band, and he only took over Nordic then, which he had already been, of course, conducting for many years. So I was disappointed to learn that Weston wasn't doing the band, but Fred Nyland was just starting, and he became a good mentor for me, certainly. And I had a great experience in the Luther band, but I have to tell you, I really wanted to work with Weston. And we did get to know each other. In fact, I got to know him quite well when he remembered that I was Janet's little brother. And so I would drive him to festivals in Southern Iowa, for instance. He would have a student do that. And I was one of those lucky people who got to know Weston really well because I was able to be his driver occasionally. And so anyway, I think, you know, Luther College was, of course, the turning point for me. I started as a math major at Luther, thinking that's what I was going to do. But music, I thought, oh, well, I'm good at music. I better take a music class. So I signed up for music theory. And after a year of calculus and a year of music theory, you know, I started leaning in music direction. I was a good mathematician, but I wasn't as obviously talented as I was in music. So, and then by my senior year, I was able to audition successfully into the Nordic Choir, which was tough on me because I was already in band and in orchestra, and I had to give up something. And so here I am, the orchestra conductor at St. Olaf, but my senior year, I was only part-time in the orchestra. I only played when I could, and I stayed in the Nordic Choir, which was a very transformative experience. Yeah. Dave, you're a Nordic alum, right?
I am, indeed.
And so you know, I mean, what an incredibly transformational and inspiring experience it was to work with Weston, who became a dear, dear friend. And that just really changed my life on so many levels. But Bob Getchell was my brass teacher. He was a very wonderful mentor. He was my first conducting teacher, and he kind of encouraged me to think about conducting. So anyway, I graduated from Luther after just 4 fabulous years. I just, you know, I can't say enough about my experience there. Made dear, dear friends who are friends of a lifetime. But then I went to Northwestern University. I did get into the orchestral conducting program for my master's, and had a fantastic experience. I was a kind of a late bloomer on the orchestral side, obviously, but they took a chance on me and I had a good experience. And then I did another year past my master's out at the University of Virginia, which was very interesting because my old high school director in Little Waterford, Wisconsin, when he was 22, who was my high school director, gave me my first conducting lessons when I was 14. Lo and behold, down the road, this many years later, he's at the University of Virginia as the main orchestral conductor. And that was serendipitous. He actually called, we had sort of stayed in touch, and he offered me an assistantship there. And so I just did a year beyond my master's. And then I went to Salzburg to study at the Mozarteum. And now this is what's interesting. We talked, you know, my cousin, Carol Tomer, who's a pastor.
Yeah.
And she was at Holden Village. And I believe you were at Holden with her for a time. And we visited her out there, but she was there another time before I had been to Holden. And she met a really good person named Melinda Ramseth, who happened to be a St. Olaf graduate. And Carol calls me out of the blue and says, "Steve, I know you're going to Salzburg this summer to study conducting at the Mozarteum. You have got to meet my friend, Melinda Ramseth." And I knew what was coming. She's like, okay, Melinda's, you know, she just thought Melinda and I were going to get along great. And I said, "Carol, no. I'm not going to take any of this setting up." But she kept bugging me about it. And so when I was in Salzburg, and sure enough, Melinda and I met. And she happens to be a St. Olaf graduate. And this is what is just crazy, the way God works, the way the serendipities of life happen. So I'm in Salzburg. I was looking forward. I had already gotten my first job. So as soon as I got back from Salzburg, I met this girl, and that was sort of the end of it. We, you know, we got acquainted. But anyway, I got my first job in Tacoma, Washington, out in your neck of the woods, leading the youth symphony there. And it was a fantastic job. You know, I was just a 24-year-old when I got that job. I graduated Luther when I was 21, and I was 24 just starting that job, was there only 1 year. And here's what happened. The girl I met in Salzburg just happened to be on campus at St. Olaf College and happened to run into the chair of the music department. They had just had a failed search for the orchestra conductor position, which I knew nothing about. They had interviewed three people, and after those interviews, they decided none of them was the right fit. So just by chance, Melinda walks in right after that field search, and Chuck says to Melinda, "Do you happen to know anybody by chance? We're still looking for candidates for the orchestra position." And Melinda says, "Well, I met this guy in Salzburg, and he seems to be a pretty good conductor. And maybe you should check into that. He's pretty young, however." But sure enough, they called down to Luther and Northwestern and other places, and they decided maybe I was a pretty decent candidate, but they were very concerned about my age. Anyway, so they called me in Tacoma. The Chuck Forsberg, the chair, called. And I was committed to 5 years in Tacoma, and I didn't know much about St. Olaf. And I said, "I'm so flattered that you called, but frankly, I've made a five-year commitment here, and I just couldn't possibly leave. Thank you for calling," and I hung up. 2 weeks later, Harlan Foss, the president of St. Olaf, was visiting his son, who was a pastor in Seattle. And they still hadn't found the right kind of people that they were looking for. And sure enough, he calls me. And I'm like, "What's going on here?" And Harlan, I don't know if you've ever met him, but he's just the most wonderful person. And he was such a father figure. And he spoke with me for a long time and said, "Look, Steve, the last conductor in this position was here for 33 years. This position won't be open again. Do you know much about St. Olaf?" I said, "No, not really." And then he told me about St. Olaf, and he says, "You know, it's a lot like Luther, but let me tell you, the orchestra is really pretty remarkable. And by the way, don't your parents live in Minnesota?" So sure enough, I decided to take the interview. And I remember the exit interview with Harlan at the end of the day of interviews, which was fabulous. I was blown away by the orchestra and the students, et cetera. And in that exit interview, he said to me, he said, "Steve, you know, I heard everything really went well today, but," he says, "there's only one problem." I said, "What's that?" He says, "You're really a little too young for this position." And I said, "You give me a few years and I'll fix that." And lo and behold, they offered me the job. They took a chance on a kid. I was literally 25 when I started with the orchestra, but I was turning 26 in October. And here I am 40 years later. So isn't that just something?
Well, you know, it reminds me of, in my journey, I have a line I used with my students over the years, that God writes straight with crooked lines. You know, I mean, we plan, and sometimes our plans work out, but often they don't. And those twists and turns along the way. And ultimately, it's about the people we encounter. It's about those relationships.
It certainly is. And I agree 100%. And but it's if it wasn't for my cousin Carol just calling me and And then we were in Salzburg, and if she hadn't run into Chuck Forsberg, I mean, none of this would have happened.
I know.
So anyway, I'm very grateful, and I've had a fantastic existence at St. Olaf.
We're now in store for a musical adventure, a mini concert of pieces you've selected to entertain, to inspire our listeners. Maestro, I believe we will begin with Norway, our mutual ancestral home.
Yes, we will. I'm going to start with Norwegian dance number one. Edvard Grieg, as you know, is a sort of a musical champion of Norwegian culture, and he chose a very nationalistic approach when writing his works. And he wrote plenty of music that showcased the folk music traditions of our home country. Grieg became intimately acquainted with a songbook that was called, I think, Mountain Melodies, Old and New. And it was a huge inspiration to him. He often quoted many of these melodies, and he fashioned new ones in that style. But many of these melodies in this Norwegian dance collection originated from Hallingdal. Maybe you know where that is. I think that's where the Amundsen Homestead Farm is, in somewhere in that region, and where the Hardanger fiddle was especially popular. But anyway, his Norwegian dances are featuring these old peasant tunes. And when you hear my St. Olaf Orchestra perform the first dance, you'll notice it's in three sections, A, B, A, fast, slow, fast. And the first five notes of the main theme are pretty much exactly the same five notes used in boom, 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 boom in the Hall of the Mountain.
Hall of the Mountain King, right.
Right, but it's much faster, but you'll hear those fast notes, and it's you can almost imagine a troll peering around the edge of the building near you. And then the middle section is just a gorgeous lyrical passage featuring oboe. So this piece just makes my Norwegian DNA sing. So here's Norwegian Dance Number One by Grieg. Thank you.
I love that rhythm, that fast, slow, fast. And you're right, the shades of the Hall of the Mountain King from Peer Gynt. And I always love how Grieg builds the dance to a wonderful climax. What a great, great song.
No, it's really great. We've played it a few times at St. Olaf, and I just love it.
A fan favorite, I'm sure.
It is.
Our next piece has a terrific backstory and a royal ending.
Right. You know, I'll try to be really brief about this. When the St. Olaf Orchestra and St. Olaf Choir were embarking on our tour to Norway in 2019 in the summer, a day before we left, the King's entourage contacted our music office and said, we'd love the orchestra to play a fanfare for the King in Oslo at the Opera House because he was going to attend. And on one day's notice, I said, oh boy, what am I going to do? And we had no rehearsal time. All we had was the time in Oslo after we got off the plane and for our little rehearsal. And I looked through our holdings and we just didn't have anything that was appropriate or easy enough. So I said, okay, I'm just going to do this. I mean, what an opportunity. I'm going to write a piece for the King of Norway and he's going to be there and he's going to hear it. And what a great opportunity. But I had 4 days, including my flight, to get it done. And I did. And I'm pretty proud of it. But it's just a typical fanfare with lots of brass and sweeping strings, you know, kind of regal. And we had fun with it. But we literally rehearsed it for 20 minutes and performed it on our concert. And the choir comes in at the end, Kjære Norge, which means beloved Norway. Since the choir was there, I just wrote a really brief part for them at the end of the piece.
So fanfare for Harald V.
Yes. Hope you enjoy it.
Dave Ellingson here with a quick intermission during this podcast. First, thank you for being a listener to the Paddle Pilgrim podcast. I hope these episodes have inspired, encouraged, and entertained you on your life adventure. Please help us grow the audience for the Paddle Pilgrim podcast by liking, sharing, and subscribing to our podcast. Thanks. Back to the podcast. Well, I've shared this piece with many friends, and we join with King Harald in our applause. I love the brass. Then there's that kind of romantic strings piece. You know, it's a wonderful, wonderful, and you said typical, not at all typical. It's wonderful. So well done.
Now we
get to hear another piece, a composition of yours, born of a very different time, a sad time.
Yes. Yes, this was a piece that was a result of a very sad occasion for myself and for the entire Singalov Orchestra. One of the, probably the finest, actually, student percussionists that I worked with at Singalov over all of my 40 years had just graduated. This was back in the mid-2000s. And 2 years or so after he graduated, he was in a fatal car accident, and it just was absolutely devastating. His name is Eric Drotning, and his older sister was actually an alumni of the orchestra as well, and she played cello and was actually one of our babysitters. So I got to know the entire family quite well. It wasn't too long after Eric's death that his parents called and said, listen, we would love you to write a piece in his honor. And of course, I was thrilled to do it. So I'm just going to tell you, well, I have to also mention that we went to tour down to New Mexico in Albuquerque on that right after I wrote it. So we were able to present it there in that community. And I'm telling you, it was a powerful experience. All of Eric's friends and extended family, teachers, et cetera. And I'll tell you, there were many tears and many hugs. But I just want to quickly tell you about how I designed the piece. Eric Drotning, think of his musical letters for Eric, E and C. For Drotning, D and G. E, C, D, G. So those are the four notes that are the basis for the piece. And the piece starts with those four notes. You can't miss it. And at one point, they did ask me to please include O Day Full of Grace, which is their main favorite hymn. Mm-hmm. And I said, I would love to, because it's also one of my favorite hymns. So it morphs this, listen to this one. Dee, da, 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 da. I start with the E, C, D, G, do, 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 do. So you'll hear that kind of those two things come together. So you'll hear the E, C, G, D theme. You'll hear the cellos play a theme, and that's kind of Eric's sister accompanied by Eric on marimba. So we have a little percussion and cello featuring those two in a sense. And then oboe plays a little theme, and eventually you'll hear a little grace coming from heaven. You'll hear bells and harp, kind of the grace, God's grace coming down upon us. And then you'll hear a full statement of O Day Full of Grace. And then finally it all calms down and you hear the opening idea again. So it's a piece special to my heart, and I hope you enjoy it.
And it's called The Gift.
Right.
Well, Stephen, the phrase excruciatingly beautiful comes to mind. The way you wove O Dayful of Grace, you know, a favorite melody with F. Melius Christiansen into mm-hmm. the heart of the piece is really deeply moving. By the way, I used that song in a video I created for my mom's memorial service. She was a St. Olaf grad, and the final line of that, the lyric, was penned by a favorite theologian and hymn writer, Nikolai Grundtvig. It captures, I think, all of our hopes. And there we shall walk in endless light, in endless light.
I'm getting chills just now having you say that. I know. It's so true. It's just one of the most beautiful hymns. And there are several lines in the hymn that really pertained to just the darkness of that time, and yet how healing God's love and grace is in those times.
Amen. And now for more dance music, this time with Brahms.
Right. I love Brahms, truly one of my favorite composers. And, you know, we know him as a kind of a composer of high art, his mm-hmm. symphonies, his chamber music, his vocal works, the incredible Requiem, you know, the German Requiem. But we don't think of him as composing much light music. But here's an example. I'm going to have us listen to the Hungarian Dance number 6. You know, Brahms was noted to have a lighter side, especially with his friends in the evening with a glass of beer, you know. He wrote quite a bit of music that was more entertainment rather than for the concert hall. Music kind of for the parlor or for home gatherings. So anyway, he was exposed to some gypsy style Chartist music by one of his friends, and he just thought that was great. And he decided, I've got to write some music in that style. So he forged 21 Hungarian dances. Mm. And they were originally written for piano, four hands, so that they would easily be heard in small settings. But of course, they were so beloved that eventually they were orchestrated. And all of them, I believe, are orchestrated. And the popular one is the 5th, but I think the best is the 6th. And it's filled with humor, quick changes of mood, sudden tempo changes, accelerandos, and all these different personalities. It's just, it gets under your skin. I love it.
So get on your dance shoes for a little Brahms dance music.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Steve, I've always been impressed by how the great composers often drew upon the folk traditions. I mean, clearly that was true of Grieg, and and it's true of Brahms, and what could be more inspiring than the folk music, the music of the people, and then to make it immortal in an orchestral piece. That is, I was moving around as I was listening to that. It's a great dance piece. Mm-hmm. Now, our next piece, Steve, I have to confess, I've shared with more people than any other. It's not orchestral unless you add the kazoo to the ensemble. but the piece should disabuse anyone to any classical orchestral snobbery. Tell us about this piece.
Are you talking about the quartet?
Yeah, indeed.
The barbershop quartet. Yep. I tell you what. So a year ago, March 13th, when COVID kind of hit, the orchestra was just getting ready to do a concert, and we were having our last rehearsal. And right after that last rehearsal, our manager came in and said, "Sorry, the concert is canceled." And then 3 days later, the president announced that we would all have to go home. And it was just absolutely devastating news, and especially, of course, for our seniors. Now, we were at that moment hopeful we would be able to come back and, you know, have some normalcy again. And of course, that didn't happen. So about the time when it was decided we weren't going to have graduation and we weren't going to come back, my heart just went out to my seniors in particular. And I said, you know, and I was also just sad and needed a project. I was spending a lot of time at home like we all were. So I decided I'm going to write a piece, especially for my seniors. And the theme of this piece is the theme, one of the themes that I use in all of my rehearsals and concerts. I talk a lot about gratitude, and I got that from my parents and people like your parents who really were thankful spirits and kept that front and center. So I wrote a piece telling them that I feel their gratitude. I feel the gratitude for being in their lives and them being in my lives. I feel gratitude for all the wonderful music making opportunities we had. And so I made a quartet of four of me. I sang all the parts, and there's a video out there that it makes it a little bit more fun if you watch it, so you can see the four Steves interacting a little bit. But yeah, I had fun with it, and I hope you guys enjoy it.
To the Orkies, let's hear right. Some great, a great quartet.
It's been a rough few weeks, I bet you feel the same. We've been working every day, but we're just not on our game. Our life is pretty dull without our normal routine. Our dearest holy orchestra, where have you all been? We really miss our orchies, that's certainly true. Since you've been away, we're definitely feeling blue. We miss making music, the kind that's profound. Those melodies, those harmonies, that glorious sound. That sound. Yet, we feel that gratitude, abundant gratitude. We're so grateful to have you, Orkies, in our lives. Gratitude, abundant gratitude. We're so lucky to have you, Orkies, in our lives. Yes, in our lives. We miss our dearest Orkies every minute of each day. We lament the lack of music ringing where we used to play. Perhaps we took for granted all our time in CHM, playing Mahler and Stravinsky and, of course, Beethoven. The music we've been sharing with you talented folks, with you big-hearted Orkies who even laugh at our jokes. Our memories are splendid and they'll carry us through, but we wish you could come back because all we have are these kazoos. Dear seniors, you are special and we wish you Godspeed. We're your biggest fans and we all know that you will succeed. We hope you will stay safe and well and be of good cheer.
We'll keep you in our hearts because to us you're so dear.
We feel such gratitude, abundant gratitude. We're so grateful to have you, Orkies, in our lives. We feel that gratitude, that grateful attitude. We're so lucky to have you, Orkies. Lucky to have you, Orkies. Lucky to have you, Orkies, in our... Yes, in our... lives.
Well, a phrase from Holden Village comes to mind after listening and watching. I hope people... Google Steve Amundson Barbershop. They'll see you in various different attires, singing wonderfully. And the phrase from Holden is called holy hilarity. I think that captures it. And what a great piece. And the crowd is, you know, on their feet as we wind down towards the end of our mini concert. And the next piece, is really the signature piece of the St. Olaf Orchestra. How did it come to be?
Right, there's a professor at St. Olaf who is now gone, but he was at St. Olaf, I think 50s through the 70s. His name was G. Winston Kassler, and he was as English as anyone I know. And he was an organ professor and a composer, and he taught music theory, and he was a very beloved man. But he loved the St. Olaf Orchestra, and he wanted to offer a gift to the orchestra in the right around 1960, 61. And that was an arrangement of one of his favorite folk songs called The Turtle Dove. And those lyrics to Turtle Dove date back to 18th century, and I think I'm not quite sure who wrote the melody, but I think Vaughan Williams is often attributed to it. I know he wrote a piece based on this folk song for baritone early on. But anyway, it's a piece that before I was at St. Olaf, of course, just became very beloved and decided to perform it every concert on tour at the end as a little farewell song to our audience. Also every end of the year as a farewell song to all of our seniors. And it's kind of like the St. Olaf Choir's Beautiful Savior or the Nordic Choir's O Lord God.
Indeed.
And it's a tradition. And I'm just going to read a little bit of the text. Fare you well, my dear. I must be gone and leave you for a while. If I roam away, I'll come back again, though I roam 10,000 miles, my dear. Oh, yonder doth sit that little turtle dove. He doth sit on yonder high tree, a-making a moan for the loss of his love, as I will do for thee, my dear. As I will do for thee.
So, Turtle Dove, let's have a wonderful final piece.
Thank you.
Lovely. That's that word comes to mind. Simply lovely. We leave the concert with a warm and peace-filled joy. Oh, but I hear applause. It's Stephen. It's continuing. our audience in the cloud of witnesses is calling for an encore. I think there's a piece that you mentioned to me that you would like us to hear as an encore.
Well, if we have time, there is a piece that is very, very special to me. And I think if anybody knows it, they'll also feel the same. And if they don't know it, it's worth a good listen. So this is, it's called Nimrod. It's the ninth variation of Elgar's Enigma Variations, which is a very masterful piece. And Elgar wrote, each variation is a tribute to one of his friends. He even dedicated one to his dog. And each one has initials at the top of the variation that sort of signifies who it's dedicated to. So Elgar's best friend was A.J. Jaeger. And his last name, it means hunter auf Deutsch. Mm. And in the Bible, there's a hunter named Nimrod. And this is a weird connection, but they started calling him Nimrod as a nickname because his last name meant hunter, and Nimrod was a hunter in the Old Testament. And I didn't know that until I read about this piece early on. But anyway, this music is simply love. It just is. He was Elgar's best friend, and this is musical love, pure and simple. It builds from a quiet beginning and goes to a beautiful climax and then just fades away beautifully. I do love this piece, and I hope everybody enjoys listening to Nimrod by Edward Elgar.
Steve, this has been great fun. And as we close, I have a final question for you. What advice, what wisdom do you have for young musicians who might be listening?
Oh, that's a great question. And of course, I work with young musicians and I do love that. And here's a few bits of advice. Number one, if you want to enjoy music for the rest of your life, don't forget to get in the practice room and keep at it. But the other thing is always find opportunities to make music with your friends. And I'm a huge fan of chamber music, doing duets and trios and quartets. And then always remember that music is a bridge in life. It's a connector. It connects varying cultures and races and genders and every sort of difference. Music is needed. All the arts are needed in this fractured world of ours. Music is healing. Music is a uniter. So we need you out there to make music and to help build community. And remember that when you look for colleges, you young people, to do music, find a place that's not about competition, but rather about unifying people, about community. Find a place that builds community, a place like Luther College, where Dave and I went to school, or at St. Olaf, where I teach, where we value community. We value the opportunities to make music together, and we cherish what it does for our heart and soul and for our mind. So find opportunities to make music and find joy in that.
Well, once again, thanks or tusen tak, Stephen Amundsen, for blessing us and blessing our Magic of Music program with your musical journey and a magnificent and fun concert.
Thank you, Dave. I can't tell you how fun it is to be with you. You are an amazing person, and I'm excited to follow your podcast now that I am very aware of it. And thank you so much. Yes, tusen tak, mange tusen tak.
Mange tusen tak. Until next time, I'm Dave Ellingson, and this has been the Paddle Pilgrim Podcast, the podcast which explores adventures in life, relationships, and the human spirit. In coming episodes of my series, The Magic of Music, we will enjoy jazz, orchestral, country, and the music of Broadway. Tune in and subscribe to the Paddle Pilgrim Podcast on your mobile device, computer, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And for more information on my books and films, check out my website, paddle-pilgrim.com. And thanks for listening.